Okay. Yeah, I'm pleased to talk today about our proposal on the teleportation of electronic many-qubit states via single photons. This work has been done in collaboration with Michael Flatey at the University of Iowa, while I still was working at the University of Iowa, and with David Avshalom from the University of California, Santa Barbara. But this work is supported by DARPA-ARRO, DARPA-ONR, and U.S. National Science Foundation. So first, I want to show you with this movie that quantum teleportation does not teleport matter, as in this science fiction movie. So. But the truth is that quantum teleportation teleports quantum information. So I want to make this point clear.
It's not merely a tool.
No, exactly. Probably. So here in this scheme, here in this figure, you can see how teleportation works and how it was implemented with photons only. So the theory was developed by Bennett and collaborators in 1993, and it was experimentally then verified by Baumeister and collaborators in 1997. So here, for the teleportation scheme, you use three photons, where photon 1 and photon 2, they are sent to Alice. Alice is the sender of the information, and Bob is the receiver of the information. So photon 3 is sent to Bob. The initial state is encoded into photon 1 here on Alice's side. So photon 1 is an arbitrary superposition of horizontal and vertical polarization. And photon 2 and 3, so these two photons, they are prepared in so-called Bell state, so they are entangled. And you can choose one of these entangled states. So for example, you can choose the singlet state for photon 2 and photon 3. So you give photon 2 to Alice and photon 3 to Bob. And then the teleportation is done by means of a Bell measurement, which is a correlation measurement between between photon 1 and photon 2. So the way you can see that is that you can write the three photon state, so the state of photon 1, 2, and 3. You can write that like that, so that's just the direct product of this initial state times our Bell state. And then you can change the basis to the Bell basis of photon 1 and 2. So with this, in this step, you don't do anything. You just change the basis. You change your representation. So these are the same states. And if you write this state in the Bell representation of photon 1 and 2, then you get here a superposition of these four terms here. So what that means here, you get these four Bell states for photon 1 and 2, and photon 3 can be here in one of these four states with equal probability. If you perform a correlation measurement on photon 1 and 2, you will project this 3 photon state onto one of these 4 states with equal probability. So this means also that photon 3 is projected onto one of these 4 states with equal probability. Now, this measurement is done by Alice here. And the outcome of this measurement is sent through a classical channel from Alice to Bob. So she has to send this outcome to Bob so that Bob knows which state he really has received. So for example, if Alice measures this correlation, then Bob would have this state here. So that would be minus alpha horizontal polarization plus beta vertical polarization. And as you can see here, it's almost the same, but there is an additional minus sign. So Bob knows then from the outcome of this measurement that he can reconstruct this initial state by applying a unitary transformation. And he knows that for sure because he knows the outcome of this correlation measurement. So he needs this information Otherwise, everything would be scrambled. So he really needs to get this information. And after the reconstruction of this initial state, then the teleportation is complete. So that's how you teleport information from Alice to Bob. And this is here you can see how the measurement was done and how you can do that in an experiment. So you use an ultraviolet pulse here that goes through a nonlinear crystal, which usually is a beta barium borate crystal, and then you produce here entangled photons, which would be here in the first step the two photons 2 and 3. So 2 goes to Alice, and then this pulse is reflected by a mirror, and you produce again a second pair of entangled photons, and photon 1 here is then used as an initial state, so it's initialized. It is prepared in an arbitrary superposition, and then Alice performs this coincidence measurement between the photon 1 and 2, which projects then here photon 3 on one of these four states with equal probability. And here you can see a real-world experiment that was done very recently. It uses here again exactly the same technique with a beta barium borate crystal. And here the photon was sent through a quantum channel, which is an optical fiber that rests in the sewage pipe tunnel below the River Danube in Vienna, and it has a total length of 800 meters. So the quantum information could be teleported then across this River Danube, and here and I'm glad that I didn't have to put up this optical channel in the sewage system. And the trick that they used here is that the light speed inside the fiber is two-thirds of the light speed in vacuum. So this means that Alice can perform her correlation measurement and send it through the classical channel, and this outcome of the measurement will arrive at Bob before the photon, the third photon, arrives here. So this means that they can already set here this electro-optic modulator to perform then this unitary correction operation, so that they can restore the original state. And in this way, they could achieve fidelities that were larger than 80%. So that's the theory so far, and then we came up with a theory for the teleportation of the electronic many-qubit states via single photons. So we call this the so-called GHC teleportation method, where we produce a GHC state between spins, photon and other spins. No Bell measurements are required in our teleportation scheme, and it is fully scalable to arbitrarily many qubits. So the goal here is that you want to teleport spin information that is encoded here in the spins of these quantum dots on the left side, so that would be the origin. You want to teleport this many spin state from left to right. So at the end you want to get your many spin state here at the destination. So the idea is that you use single photon sources here on the right side. So it's a little counterintuitive, but you inject your photons from the right side, so they propagate from the destination to the origin, but the teleportation works then from origin to destination. So that's a little different. So what you do here is these single photons here, they get first entangled here with the quantum dots at the destination. I will show you later how this entanglement works. It's by means of the interaction between the photons and the quantum dot. Then after this entanglement process, the photons travel to the origin, where they get also entangled with the spins here at the origin. And after the second entanglement, we have produced a GHC state between the spin over here, the polarization of the photon, and the spin over there.
So these are separate channels, you know, photon 1 and photon 2.
Yes, these are separate channels. Yes.
We don't need anything, we just need the first.
The first one would already be nice, yeah. And then here, after this second entanglement, you have to measure the linear polarization of the photon and also the single spin in transverse direction. And these two measurements, they can be completely independent, so it doesn't have to be here a Bell measurement, because we produced a GHC state. And after these two measurements, the state here is projected onto the destination. And again, you have to send here the outcome of these measurements from the origin to the destination to reconstruct the state at the destination. So that's how this would work. So again, we just use a Greenberger-Horn-Zeilinger entanglement between the three states. So we have here a spin, a photon state, and also a spin state. And in this way, we can we can only project with independent measurements. We use quantum dots, so I don't need to go through that, with optical selection rules. And we came up with the concept of conditional Faraday rotation. And first I want to show you what a classical Faraday rotation is. I think you're already familiar with that. So the idea is that if light that is linear polarized travels here through a slab of material that is magnetized, then this linear polarization will get rotated by the angle beta. So beta depends on this Verde constant and also on the magnitude of the external magnetic field and of course also on the length of this slab of material. The Verde constant is proportional to the difference in index of refraction for right and left circularly polarized light, which is proportional to the magnetization of the material, and that's why you can see the rotation of the linear polarization. So I define here the horizontal linear polarization by this double arrow. So that would be a polarization in x direction. The vertical linear polarization would be a polarization in y direction. And right circular polarization is then here a superposition with an I here. So you have right circular polarization and left circular polarization. And the wave vector here points in z direction. Now these are the optical selection rules that you get for spherical quantum dots. Because of these optical selection rules, you obtain a single photon Faraday rotation, which is conditional on the spin state of the quantum dot, and that's how you can entangle then the photon, the polarization of the photon, with the spin on the quantum dot. So here you can see if the spin on the quantum dot is up, so that would be one excess electron per quantum dot, which is in a conduction band state, then only here sigma plus photon can produce a virtual electron hole pair, where the hole would be a heavy hole. So that's the only way you can have this transition. And there is also a possibility to produce an electron hole pair virtually, but this time here the hole would be a light hole. So these are the two possibilities, and this transition here is three times more likely than that transition. So you get here a stronger amplitude for this process for producing electron hole pairs than for this transition. And
you are invoking light hole. Is it the same energy as the heavy hole state?
For a spherical dot.
And
yeah, that's for a spherical dot. And I will show also later how it is for
it's for nanocrystal.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So that would be one possibility. And if the spin is down, then you get exactly the same. It's just the mirror image. So only a sigma minus photon here will interact strongly with the heavy hole here. So it will produce an electron hole pair with the heavy hole. And the sigma plus photon will produce here electron hole pair with a light hole. So that's how you can couple them. But because here the matrix elements are different, you get still a selection rule, and that's a 50% selection rule for this non-resonant interaction. So the frequency of the photon is detuned with respect to this transition energy. So you obtain then a phase shift of the photon for these Wirtle processes involving the heavy holes, which is three times larger than for Wirtle processes involving light holes. And that's how you get a net Faraday rotation of the polarization of the photon. The phase shift also depends on the spin state, as you can see here. And that's how you can get then the entanglement of the polarization of the photon with the spin on the quantum dot. So here again, you can see that how it works if you introduce strain or if you introduce an anisotropy in your confinement potential, then you would get 100% selection rules, and you get something like an accelerated Faraday rotation. And you can even see how this works. So a virtual electron hole pair is produced here by means of a sigma plus photon if the spin is up, and if the spin is down, then only sigma minus photon can produce a virtually an electron hole pair. So again, you get a phase shift, and that's how you obtain a Faraday rotation of this linear polarization of the photon, which depends on the spin state on your quantum dot.
How does it depend on the energy of these two states that involve light and heavy hole?
It's off resonant.
It's off resonant. Is it the same detuning?
For spherical dots, it would be the same detuning for asphere.
Then the question is this intermediate state, the trion state to which one is going, the same if the heavy hole is involved or the light hole is involved? Surely it's not.
No, it's different.
Yeah, so
it's different.
It cannot be at the same energy.
If you have a completely spherical system, then you can do that. But usually, what people do is, if they have self-assembled quantum dots, then you always break the symmetry in one direction. And if you break the symmetry, then it's completely different. That would be the previous case. That's this one. So here you have really a strong heavy hole light hole splitting. So as soon as you have anisotropies, you have this case. And here I'm going to show you how this teleportation works. So the idea is to first prepare the quantum dots at the destination in transverse direction, so that would be in a superposition of up plus down in c direction, and the incoming photon that would be from the right side is polarized in one direction, and then this photon interacts with the quantum dot, so it the electron photon state acquires phase shifts due to this interaction. It requires a phase shift due to the interaction, which involves heavy holes, and another phase shift due to interaction that involves light holes. And here you can see these two parts here. And if this difference between the heavy hole phase shift and the light hole phase shift, if this phase shift is equal to pi over 2, then you get the maximum entanglement between the polarization of the photon and the spin on the quantum dot. Then the photon is sent to the origin, and this and then the photon will be at the origin, and the spin will be at the destination. And these two, the photon and the spin, they are in a Bell state. So that corresponds to the distribution of the EPR pair between origin and destination. So that's why the photon travels in a reverse direction. And here in this animation, you can see what happens during the interaction. So that's how you produce your EPR state. So the polarization of the photon is entangled with the spin at the destination. Then you prepare the spin at the destination in an arbitrary superposition, or you can do that also from the beginning. And you will let then the photon interact with the quantum dot at the origin. And here you can see what happens in this animation. So you get here these four different possibilities. And after the second interaction, you produce the GHC state between the spin at the origin, the photon, and the spin at the destination. Now, after producing this GHC state, you can make the measurements. So you measure first the polarization of your photon. So you can write here this GHC state here in this form. And then if you measure the polarization of the photon, you measure either vertical polarization or horizontal polarization. So these are the two possibilities. And then you project the state of your two spins on either this state here, here, or this state. So these are the two possibilities with equal probability. And after this projection, you need also to measure the spin state of the spin at the origin in transverse direction. So you change here again the basis. And after the second measurement, you project the spin at the destination onto one of these four states. And probably if you remember the slide that I've shown to you before for in the case of the teleportation of single photons, you will see that these are exactly the same states that you would get. So what you will do then, you will send this outcome of these two measurements, you send that from Alice to Bob, so from the origin to the destination, and then you can reconstruct the original state that was prepared at the origin. So that's how you can perform that single qubit teleportation. Now here's the calculation that we did for this conditional Faraday rotation. So I used a full Hamiltonian consisting of the Luttinger Cohn Hamiltonian for spherical dots, where you have here also the spin orbit interaction, and also an interaction Hamiltonian which describes the interaction between the electron and the vector potential of the electromagnetic field. And then you can write this Hamiltonian, this full Hamiltonian in the rotating frame, so that would be rotating with the frequency of your photon. And then you obtain this Hamiltonian here, where you can see that you get a non-resonant interaction if you have here a spin up on the quantum dot and the sigma plus photon, which interacts non-resonantly with a spin up on the quantum dot and a heavy hole exciton that you produce. So that's an electron hole pair with a heavy hole. So you get here this off-resonant interaction over here, and the same also for the process that involves light holes over here. So you have always this detuning energy over here, which is h bar omega d. Then if the interaction, if the electron-photon interaction is much smaller than this detuning energy, then you can approximate here your states. So this means that the spin up and the sigma plus photon and the spin up and the sigma minus photon, they always remain fully populated because the frequency of your photon is detuned with respect to the transition, so you don't produce real excitons on your quantum dot. So they remain fully populated. And then after an interaction time t, you can calculate your electron-photon state, and you will see that this state here acquires two different phase shifts here, which you can see over here. So these phase shifts, one is due to the heavy hole process, one is due to the light hole process, and you will get exactly the same for the spin down with sigma plus photon and the spin down in the sigma minus photon. So you get here just two more blocks in your Hamiltonian. So these phase shifts are different, and that's why you obtain net Faraday rotation of the... Non-perturbative is because you calculate here the time evolution. So
the processes you are looking at are the same which you introduced a couple of slides before, so where this one one representation of higher orders. I mean, you could imagine.
No, you don't do that. Yes. So that's why then the calculation is valid for at all times, but you don't go to strong interaction. And you can do this calculation. You don't need this approximation. You can do also the full calculation exactly. And you can do this approximation only at the end. So here again, you can see what happens during this interaction. So that's the state with which we start, where the spin is an arbitrary superposition of up and down, and the photon is linearly polarized. You get here two different phase shifts, and if they are exactly pi over 2, the difference is exactly pi over 2, then you get the farther rotation of the polarization of the photon, which you can see over here. And if you wait then for the exact the right amount of time, then you will entangle the photon with the spin on the quantum dot. You can measure the spin in transverse direction, and then the photon is projected on one of these two states with equal probability. So that's the optospintronic link then that you produce between photons and electron spins. And here I can show you also how we propose to couple the photons and the electron spins. So it is necessary to have a strong interaction so that the interaction time becomes smaller. But at the same time, of course, the interaction time gets larger because the photon sits close to the electron spin for a longer time. So there are two parameters that you want to optimize. So the idea is that the quantum dots are embedded in microcavities. This can be also photonic crystals, for example, where you introduce a defect and then you put your quantum dots at the position of this defect in the photonic crystal. And in this way, you can enhance then the interaction between the electron spin and the photon. And if you use, for example, such volume cavities, you can calculate then the interaction time that is necessary to entangle a photon with a spin, which would be in this case 1 nanosecond for this type of volume. And you can do also a different calculation. So now it is possible already to produce volume cavities that are the cavities that are much smaller in volume. And then you would need only, for example, interaction times of the order of 50 picoseconds to achieve this maximum entanglement. And these are 2-qubit. This is the way how you can teleport 2 qubits. So I don't know if we want to hear about that. It's essentially the same as for 1 qubit.
I think it's okay.
Okay. So that's the way you do it. So here maybe just in the small animation you see what happens with the conditional Faraday rotation. And here you entangle again both parties with each other. So you can see here all the different possibilities of conditional Faraday rotation. And then all the spins are entangled with each other. And that's how you can teleport also 2 spins from one location to another. And that's how you have to collapse then your fate. There is also a way with our scheme to produce entangled photons. The idea is to prepare already your 2 spins in an entangled state, and then by means of this conditional Faraday rotation, you can map this state that is on the 2 quantum dots. You can map it onto the 2 photons by means of these measurements. So again, you have to measure in transverse direction, and then you produce something like a direct teleportation from spin onto the polarization of the 2 photons. And that's how you can produce, for example, these 2 Bell states for your 2 photons. And these are the conclusions of my talk. I want to say also that by means of this entanglement method, it is also possible to produce quantum computing between different parties. So you can produce quantum computing between two spins that are coupled through these photons. So what you need to do is then just always to measure only the polarization of your photon, and then you can produce gates between the two spins. So that would be something like a generalization of this teleportation scheme. Yeah, thanks. One problem is, for example, the leakage out of this microcavity. So you have a probability that your photon escapes, and that wouldn't be good. You don't know then where it is. That's one problem. That's why it is good to have a strong interaction, and then that the volume is very small. So if the volume is very small, then your interaction between the photon and the electron is also very strong, and you can reduce this interaction time, so that the leakage will be small.
What about photon detection? Do you need 100% efficient single photon detection?
Yes, you need to have a high efficiency with the photon detection. And that has been done already with a very high probability.
Everything relies on being able to retain the polarization of light in the photon. That means that I need free space communication between the two spins, yeah? Because it's a question in the comment. Mm-hmm. If I need to rotate the polarization, I cannot do this in a fiber, on a waveguide, in a photonic crystal where this degree of freedom is frozen. It's, am I mistaken?
In a fiber, usually you would need somehow to make the two states, the X and Y polarization, degenerate, so that you can rotate your polarization. So that's also one of the maybe difficulties that we are trying also to overcome, also in cavities. Usually you have also asymmetry between X and Y polarization cavities, and then experimental methods to overcome this problem, so that you can grow it very symmetrically in one direction. There is also another way, for example, for this entanglement. So you can produce, for example, entanglement between emitted photon and the spin that is on the quantum dot by first producing a bi-exciton on one quantum dot. Then you let one of the photons emit, and then the spin on your quantum dot is entangled with the photon. And there was the same problem that you usually you have an asymmetry between X and Y polarization, but they overcame this problem by applying an in-plane magnetic field so that you can make the two levels degenerate. So there are ways to do that.
And how do you physically imagine such a magnitude state of one quantum working with large spin? What is the physical realization?
So in this idea, the many qubit state is produced in many quantum dots. So that was.
But that's many qubit state of one quantum dot.
It's
the first slide.
One quantum dot system.
Yeah, one quantum dot.
Yes. In a system of quantum dots.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
I was also in this.
Yes.
So here really that there is one spin per quantum dot.
Sorry for not reading to them.
Okay. Any more discussion? Okay, lunchtime.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.